All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength and Conditioning Podcast. Great, much mouth walking into it already. Joined, as always, by my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. Glad to be back. We have another good one on store for you. So last couple weeks, we've been talking about different movement patterns. So we have the squat, we have the hinge variation, the press, and we're going to top it all off with pulling variations. So, you know, when we really look at functional movement, we're really just covering the basis for everything that we need or should be able to do in everyday life. But Adam and I will take a chance to really break down the motor pattern involved, why it's important. But I really think the pull is important because when a lot of people have shoulder pain or upper extremity in general, or upper extremity pain, you know, the pull is something that can be easily modified to allow people to still work their upper extremity and not just having to avoid it. Because the biggest thing that I hear is, I hurt my shoulder, I can't do anything. So I use the pull a lot, but we'll talk about that a little bit further. So Adam, as always, you know, what exactly is the importance of the pull? Functionally, why do we need it?
So I tend to think of the pull in the same way, pull for the upper body in the same way they think about the deadlift for the lower body. And I mean, you know, depending on how you talk about it, we've talked about the deadlift as a lower body pull in quotes and stuff like that. So it kind of runs along the same lines. But basically, it helps you stay erect, up tall. It helps you, you know, with joint space, that kind of thing. It just kind of offsets all the... I'm always trying to think of a better way to say it other than like poor movement patterns, but that's essentially what it is, or poor postures or whatever that we get in throughout the day from, you know, being seated more often than we're not. Well, you know what I mean. Yep. But being seated as often as we are is a better way to put it. And just how much you can clean up when it comes to mechanics if the backside of your body, whether it be the hinge motion, the lower body, or the pull, the upper body, if that's how you want to classify them, how important that is.
Well, especially where you touched upon kind of that sitting posture, we tend to have an over-reliance on the muscles in the front of our body, which, you know, as I've called them before, they're the hunting muscles. But also we need our pull muscles for climbing. I mean, not necessarily in today's world, but I think we lost some of the functional importance of our pull muscles along the way, just because we don't need to hunt, we don't need to climb.
Right.
So it's a lot easier. But you know, even at the easiest, let's say I hinge forward and then squat to pick up something off the ground, to increase my center of gravity, I can pull the object closer to me to stand back up relatively easier. So, you know, we do a lot of pulling. Well, but whether we do it efficiently is a different manner. So
yeah, and I think that, you know, the teaching people how to pull the correct way is often something that becomes a fix to a lot of different things, whether it be, you know, shoulder pain. I mean, it can be back pain if their posture is poor, depending on, you know, where it is. Yep. You know, if they're super rounded forward because their upper back muscles are super either super tight or super weak, you know, that typical kind of caveman-y look you might see from somebody who does nothing but bench every single day.
Yep.
Or just people that spend 8 hours of their day hunched over a computer, that kind of thing.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I think the pull, because of the efficiency we create with our larger muscles, is just, I don't think there's enough emphasis placed on it, you know, whether, and especially in commercial gyms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we've joked about before, Monday's International Bench Day. And then from there, people will do back exercises, but they don't put the same emphasis on it. It's like, they can't see it, so what's the point? You know, or you get the individual that will come in and they'll strike a pose, you know, in the mirror. They'll see how wide their lats are. Well, they probably just did a set of lat pull downs, and that's really the extent of it. But from an injury standpoint, if we don't have good pulling muscles, you know, we are more likely to develop some type of a shoulder condition. And that's just the way that it is. We can't have our movers also be our stabilizers. You know, and as my arm goes to reach overhead to grab something or reach out in front of me, my pullers have to then maintain the center joint position throughout. And we just don't do that from the bad habits that we're in. You know, we typically roll our shoulders forward, our head sits forward, our spine is rounded, and it just doesn't work properly. We have muscles in the front of us and in the back of us that are supposed to work together. You know, and they work as synergists, and then we have what are called antagonists. So these muscles all have to work at the right time or not work at the right time. You know, they have a specific role, and part of our job is to now figure that out. Now, you touched upon people not pulling correctly. What are some of the bigger compensation patterns that you'll typically see?
The biggest one for sure is the trap engagement. Their shoulders, you know, if they're doing, let's say, a TRX row or a horizontal row, meaning they're, you know, not coming from overhead, they're coming from straight out in front of them, is when they get, their hands get closer to their body. I mean, I guess it happens at both ends, but it's usually when their hands come closer to their body, their shoulders come up into their ears.
Yep.
The trap tries to do a little bit too much, and we get the engagement bringing it up, and that's the most consistent one. The other one that's a little bit less consistent is just going into back extension. That one's significantly less, happens significantly less. You know, they try to go too far and then just kind of drive the hips further through, but that, I mean, the biggest one for sure is that the trap's getting involved.
The trap one. I also say two more common compensations that I typically find are the people that they pull their arm back and they either overcompensate by letting their elbow go too far behind them.
Okay, yeah.
Or they let the head poke forward to make it feel like their arm is driving back behind them. So those are the more common ones that I'll see, because these individuals don't have enough thoracic extension, so they have to slack the tissue somewhere. So being able to retrain that can be challenging, especially if it's someone who's sat at a desk for 40 years, that thoracic spine's not going anywhere. So it's just being mindful of those types of cheating patterns. You know, we can identify those pretty easily, but teaching people to identify them on themselves can be quite challenging, just for the fact that the body perceives a different normal from what you and I would definitely look at. Now, are there ever instances that you would tell people to not include pulling into their program?
I mean, only in a situation where we can't get them in a pain-free range of motion.
Mm-hmm.
Where we can't, you know, coach them out of a painful, or obviously, like, as with everything else, some sort of acute injury where
yep.
they're unable to use said limb. But, I mean, I'm having a hard time thinking of a time when that even really has happened.
So I think this is a good time to kind of break down horizontal versus vertical pulling. But
it
still goes back to pain-free range.
Hmm.
You know, it's more likely that if someone has pain with overhead reaching, I'm probably not going to do pull-ups in any of those variations, only because we don't know what the pain generator is. There may be severity and irritability that we need to be mindful of. But normally, with those patients or members, it's very consistent that we can actually do a row variation, you know, a horizontal row,
mm-hmm.
a standing row. Do they need to use dumbbells? No, just have them stand up and use a resistance band or something that can create a tensile load. It's very rare that I don't give something like that. Even if someone has pain in the front of the shoulder, and when their arm comes behind them into extension, I feel it. Well, I just limit their range of motion. But that goes back to the simple concepts that you and I have been talking about the entire time since we started. I mean, this is going to be like, I don't know, close to podcast 25,
28, I think.
Holy shit, that's even better than I thought. And to think people still listen.
I know, right? There's still a couple. We still have two or three left.
No, yeah. Couldn't even imagine it was that high. So it's just a matter of teaching people how to do it, but it goes back to, can they do it well? You know, and that's typically where I'll have people start. Even if they have 5 out of 10 shoulder pain, 6 out of 10 shoulder pain when they lift their arm up to 90 degrees. Generally, keeping the arm below 90, we can do a lot of rowing variations or pull exercises in the horizontal plane. So I find it to be very user-friendly. I just find if people aren't doing it, it's usually because they're weaker there and they just avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with most programs, though, at least in my opinion, I usually try to program 2 to 3 times the amount of back exercises to push exercises.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
How you felt about the, because I see a lot of 2 to 1 pull to push, or 2 to 3 to 1 or whatever. So I was curious what your thought was.
Yeah, 2 or 3 times the volume, whether that's per exercise or overall volume. And I think that works well because I like doing supersets.
Mm-hmm.
And someone could do like a heavy push and then come do a lighter pull to increase repetition, to increase the volume that way. So I think that's an important factor, and I think a lot of people can really save the shoulders if they backed off on the pressing a little bit and increased their pulling dominance, if we even want to call it that. I'd say the most common injury, pathology, whatever you choose to call it, is probably like a shoulder impingement, bicep tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
Only because if your arm comes in front of you too much, it hurts. If it goes behind you too much, it hurts. So those people, it's like, all right, we need to shut down pressing for now, and we're loading up the pulling in a pain-free range.
Yeah.
And that's the important part.
Let's say, I feel like I see you give that, I feel like 95% of the people that I know are coming to you for shoulder pain, if I see you doing anything with them, it's working with them on a row.
Correct.
And yeah, that more often than not, it's amazing to me. I guess it shouldn't be, because it's like, how would they know? But how many people are so worried about, like, oh, I can't, you know, we're doing TRX rows, and like, oh, my shoulder hurts, I can't be doing that.
Yeah.
And like, okay, come on, no, hold on, come over here, come on, try it, let's go.
Yeah.
And, you know, like,
go ahead and dip your toe
does
in.
Does that hurt? No. Perfect. Like, slap on the back, walk away.
Yeah.
And I'm being a little facetious with that, but like...
But it can be that simple.
But it, yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people, they just automatically look at the shoulder. Well, I wouldn't say shoulder, or I wouldn't say automatic either, but when there's a sore body part,
mm-hmm.
we just assume that all motions are going to hurt it, and that's just human nature. We want to protect it. But we also know that it's okay to load it when it's still healing, as long as we don't overdo it. You know, if someone had a hurt shoulder and said, I want to do push-ups, I'm not going to say don't do a push-up. Let's go ahead and find a way we can do it. Pulling is no different.
Mm.
But squatting and deadlifting is no different. Let's find a way that you can do it. So, as I always like to throw these scenarios at you, let's say someone comes in, it doesn't matter what side it is, shoulder pain. Let's say they hurt it 2 weeks ago, don't know how, they can't really reach up above 90 degrees, they're fearful with pressing movements, they're okay with doing some pulls. Where would you start them that day?
So that day would be some soft tissue work on the front side. So assuming obviously there's no irritability with the actual, you know, like lacrosse ball against the wall sort of thing, like rolling the pec to help loosen that up. Because more off, I would imagine that if they've been babying it, if it hurts to reach up overhead, they're probably locked forward right now.
Yep.
So it's usually a mix of that with a pull. So something that's going to get the shoulder back, essentially, or pulled back. So loosening up the front and then firing up the back to help put it in a more neutral position. Because I'd imagine usually when that happens, people are locked forward. They're locked in internal rotation, or, you know, with the pec turned on or whatever. So usually there, if they go to reach up overhead and you see the, you know, the trap come with it, if the, you know, the lacrosse ball or whatever on the pec isn't enough, maybe I'm adding in some lacrosse ball on the trap or something along those lines. But definitely some combination of loosen up the front and work the back.
Yep. Yeah, and I just usually find that most people, their pecs are over-dominant. And the reason why I typically give pulling variations early on with rehab is just asking someone to lift their arm up, you can typically see the bulk of their pec is too tight. You know, it's just, it looks different than the other side. You can see there's increased tone. Something's just not right. And then I get in manually and start digging around, and I can appreciate that. So now just teaching them to kind of calm it down. You know, when you lift your arm, it needs to be even amounts of front of the joint, back of the joint, and giving them some type of a variation, kind of to retrain the neck, the shoulder blades, the shoulders, and kind of teach them all how to work in perfect harmony again is kind of just at least my thought process. So I'll usually start people off with banded external rotation with your elbows by your side. You know, some people call it a no money drill.
Yeah.
So I'll usually start there. And then if anyone can tolerate a band pull apart, I teach people to do that quite often. The reason I like that is it's a longer lever arm, but then you can teach them to really focus on scapular retraction first. And actually I go one step beyond that and I'll teach them chin tucking. Mm-hmm. So tuck the chin, tuck the shoulder blades, and it's like, all right, this is just your setup position before you even get started. So you have to get here before you can even move your arms. And then once they get a feel for that, then we can pull out to the side. And then it's like, if you're doing this correctly, all you should feel is in between your shoulder blades. But unfortunately, then you get those people, they pull back, pull back, pull back, dump into internal rotation with their shoulder. Now, oh, I feel this in my shoulder. It's like, what the hell are you doing? That's not what we're trying to accomplish here. So again, it's just retraining some of the finer points of their movement, I think it goes a long way. But it also, we have to remember, you know, we have to make the arm good at 90 degrees and below. Then we have to make it good from like 90 to 140. And then we have to make it better from 140 to 170 or 180 as long as we can get there. So, you know, the shoulder can be challenging when it comes to that, but pulling exercises certainly assist with that. Now, same kind of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the person gets through two or three sessions, shoulders feeling better. They don't know how to do any type of pulling. First time working out, what's your go-to variation for beginners?
Either a band attached row or, you know, depending on where you are, a cable row, something like that. Something that is a little bit more supported than like a dumbbell row would be, where the dumbbell can move forward, back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose, you know, a band or a cable can, but it's a little bit easier to teach somebody, you know, the correct shoulder movement when you can just, when you're standing, because people do have a difference when it comes to perception between looking down at the floor versus looking straight ahead. But like cable, band, something that's attached straight in front of you, and you're pulling back. TRX rows, if you don't have the ability to use a band or a cable, where, again, you're not perfectly upright, but you're closer to upright than you are, like, facing down for a bench row. It's also easier to just, like, cue them, whether it be physically or verbally, on, you know, what to do with the shoulder when they're not working as much against gravity like they are in a bench row where they're facing down towards the floor.
Yeah.
I suppose if you have the ability to, if you're in a gym that has a incline row, you know, where you can just like put your chest against and the handles are fixed and you can just have them almost pull to like a lower position to get the shoulders down, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Something that involves some sort of in front of them pulling.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you your thoughts on a seated row, because most of your traditional or a commercial gyms are going to have smaller dumbbells, or they're going to have kind of the seated row variations that you can do. What, to you, what's the biggest benefit of doing a standing row versus a seated row?
Benefit of doing is, so you have to, there's more, in quotes, core involved, for sure. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, if you're doing both at the same time, you're talking like, you know, you're not falling forward. You have to be able to work from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas seated row, you can get away with going into, you know, that shoulder tip without, for lack of a better way to put it, slinging forward.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just like rounding forward. If you've ever seen somebody do a a row like as if they're rowing a boat, you know, where their whole torso leans forward and they pull back. That's really challenging to do from a standing position.
Yep.
I guess I'd never really thought too much about, because we don't do a lot of seated rows. But I mean, not like you get in a commercial gym, but I also feel like people do a better job of, I don't know why, but since you asked me, I'm like thinking about it now. People do a better job of keeping that upright torso when they're in a standing position versus leaning back or falling forward when they're doing a seated variation. So,
and I've seen both of those. And you know, my point for the question was, I was hoping you would talk about core stabilization, or it's more functional or something along those lines. So you hit the nail right on the head. Now, if someone's going to a commercial gym and that's all they have, I think it's fine. You know, you can really isolate those muscles. The whole point of the machine is to create that artificial stabilization or external stabilization so that you can hit the muscles that you're intending to hit. So, you know, really for me, the biggest benefit of anything standing is, again, your feet are on the ground. It's the more functional position that we can get. You know, I'm a huge fan of it. Plus, you know, it also takes away from the fact that if someone has low back pain with sitting, you know, it's just nice and easy just to get them up and in the standing, teach them to engage. So there's a lot of other benefits that come along with a standing row that dumbbells, you know, don't, or a seated row doesn't necessarily offer us. Now, let's say your person has been training for 2 years, so they're no longer a rookie in the game. Mm-hmm. And they want to progress their pulling exercises. What are some variations that you would suggest to patients and members?
So, well, I mean, if we're talking like, we talking like chin-ups and stuff like that? Or so, yeah, if it's somebody that's been doing, let's say, lat pull-down for a long time, they've gotten pretty good at that, maybe working their way up to chin-ups or, you know, band-assisted chin-ups to start, depending mm-hmm. on their ability. Beyond that, maybe weighted chins. If we're talking horizontal pulls, single arm variations tend to be more challenging because you've got the anti-rotation piece in there as well, especially if you're standing.
Yep.
Things along those lines, if you want to get really creative, fun, I don't know, they suck, but they're hard and they work really well. Have you ever done bird dog rows?
Yeah.
Those are fun. I mean, they suck, but they
it's
work
great,
and
great core exercise.
But it's a great core exercise. Maybe, you know, renegade rows. They tend to be difficult to get a real true row with a renegade row. I mean, unless you're like really actually like super focused on that aspect. But
wide stance, lighter weight.
Right, exactly. But yeah, any of those that usually when it comes to progressing a row, outside of the obvious of increasing the weight or you know, going from a lat down, pull down to a chin, which is usually essentially the same as increasing the weight.
Yeah.
Adding in more components, core components, that kind of thing is usually one way that I'll make it more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you talked about adding the weight to the vertical pulling. And that's usually what I'll recommend people do, and I'll keep the relative volume low, you know, because now they're pulling 25, 40, 50. Even 70 pounds, but 1 to 3 repetitions, really the max that we go from there. Now, a lot of people ask me this, and maybe you can clarify it. I have my own answer for it, so we can discuss it after. What's the difference between a pull-up and a chin-up?
So to me, pull-up is a more challenging exercise based on the shoulder positioning compared to a chin-up. So when you say chin-up, I think palms facing you towards you, and chin-up palm, and pull-up palms facing away.
Correct.
So chin-ups, people, in my opinion, tend to find, in quotes, easier, at least in my experience. I like chin-ups a lot better because for the same reason that I like doing an overhead press with a dumbbell over a barbell, it doesn't lock you into as much external rotation throughout the length of the move, or throughout the entire range of motion.
Yep.
Whereas chin-ups allow you to move. Yes, you do get a little bit more help from the bicep and all that. And I know that a lot of purists are like, oh, well, you do, you know, chin-ups, you do pull-ups because they're harder and you can't use your biceps. But to me, it locks you into a more difficult to control range of motion, and a range of motion that a lot of people start to have trouble with, especially as they age and do less things that involve overhead pulling, pushing, whatever.
Mm. Yeah, those purists will certainly put a damper on your day. And I give both variations.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people like neutral grip pull-ups because mm-hmm. those are the easiest. You know, you have someone go in and try a neutral grip pull-up, and they absolutely, you know, knock out like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
You know, and then you ask them to do a chin-up, completely different world. You know, and people don't get that. You know, whether there's more bicep activation, don't care.
Go do a bicep curl and tell me how big of a difference it actually makes.
Yeah.
Like, it helps. I'm not saying it doesn't help, but, like, come on. Like,
it's splitting hairs at that point.
It's like people that argue that a rear foot elevated split squat because you get help from the back leg. Like, barely.
See, to me, it's just a stabilizer.
Yeah,
if
right.
you're doing it correctly, it's a
yep,
kickstand.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
If you are getting help, true help, on your back leg, it's because you have fucking shifted backwards and
now
you're catapulting.
Yeah.
And then that usually leads to knee pain.
Yeah.
You know, and people are like, I don't know why my knee hurts. Oh, your front leg? No, the back one.
Yeah.
Well, because you're fucking shifting backwards. And if I have to tell you again, we're just not going to do this.
Right.
So, literally, you just have to shift them forward 10 degrees.
Yeah.
That's it. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow. Feels completely different. Yeah, no shit. It's because you've been using your back leg when the whole point of this is to use the front leg.
Right.
So, it's just things like that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get too off on a tangent there.
I just had this conversation with someone
recently. Oh, did you really?
They're just like, I don't get why the back knee hurts. It's like, because you're shifting backwards.
Yeah.
Don't shift backwards. We went over that on day one. Shift forwards.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, I don't get it. It's like, literally, just lean your body weight a little forward. Shift your trunk 2 inches.
Put more pressure on your front foot.
Yeah.
There you go. You've shifted. So back to pull-ups and chin-ups.
and pull-ups are one of those exercises that especially females will always be like, I've never been able to do one. You know, how can I do a pull-up? What is the... I won't even say what's the obvious reason. I mean, we know that it's a lot easier for males to get pull-ups before females.
Yep.
Is it impossible? No, it can be done. I know females that can do 10, 12 bodyweight pull-ups, you know, chin over bar. It takes a lot of practice. So, for those members that want to get better at a bodyweight pull-up, how do you start them? Step one, they can't currently do it. This is how you're going to get them started.
Assuming that they at least have enough systemic strength to hold the bar, the first step is, again, we're assuming no pain, no injury, nothing like that. They're just trying to get their first chin up. It's a banded chin up. That's where I start. Assuming they can do like, you know, one chin up with the heaviest bit or the highest, I never know how to say this, most helpful band that we have, the one that has the biggest amount of stretch.
Yeah.
Assuming that they're able to do at least one with that, that's where I'm starting.
Mm-hmm.
If it's below that, if they can't even do one there, then I'm either having them do lat pull downs to start, just tall kneeling, whatever, or you know, maybe a seated lat pull down if you're at a gym that has a cable machine, or just holding at the bottom, like grip the bar, pick your feet up, hold yourself as long as you can. Once we get to the point where they can at least do one or a few with that, you know, thickest band, then it just becomes, to me, like any other exercise, progressive overload. Okay, they went from being able to do one with the heaviest or the thickest band to now they can do 6, 7, 8 with the heaviest band. Okay, we move down to a slightly thinner band.
Yeah.
So rinse and repeat until they eventually get to the point where they can do it without a band.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all other things being equal, you know, it's not somebody that... You know, and I only say this because I know that, I mean, I didn't get my first chin up until when I started at Get Fit, I still couldn't. So until maybe 6 years ago? something like that.
I was going to say, I was probably in my mid-20s before I could actually do it.
Yep, and I mean, you know what it was? It was losing a bunch of weight. Like, so it becomes that game between getting stronger, but, and this is different for, it depends on what we're talking about. You can get strong enough to pull yourself up over the bar, even if you're a bigger person, but there becomes a point where you're not pulling yourself up. You're not. You're just not going to be strong enough unless you decrease the load.
There comes a point gravity's going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was specifically that's when I was doing a lot of powerlifting, and I was much bigger. Couldn't lift my own body weight. So actually, what I did was progressive overload. I started hanging weights off of myself, and then I started to only do 50% of the range. Then 75% of the range.
That's another way to do it too,
and then I took the weights off, and then all of a sudden I could start doing it. So I kind of worked backwards, and then next thing I know, as I started losing weight, it's like, holy shit, I can do a lot of these. But it comes down to absolute versus relative strength. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have someone who is 200 pounds and can wear 90 pounds on a belt and do, you know, a couple of pull-ups. You know, that's impressive.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care who that is. That's impressive. You know, whereas you get someone who weighs 100 pounds, you know, and can lift 50 pounds.
Right.
You know, it's all relative at that point. You know, my goal is just at any point be able to do, you know, 10 pull-ups without even thinking about it. So that's kind of my Mendoza line. It's always like I should be able to squat 225. I should be able to deadlift 225. I should be able to do 10 pull-ups without thinking. And I should be able to do 30 to 40 push-ups without stopping. It's like that's a level of fitness that I should be able to keep year round. So
for those of you listening at home, that'd be a hell of a workout. If you did that just as your workout, you'd be pretty
I'd be a good it would be a good workout.
I mean, you'd have to get past the boredom part, which is what we always run into, but like that would be a pretty good, you'd be strong and you'd be in good shape, assuming that you're not being an absolute asshole with your nutrition outside of there.
Well, and again, if you think about, you know, the movement patterns that we just talked about, you know, you're hitting all the major motor patterns.
Mm-hmm.
You can switch up the weight that you're doing every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't need to do 225.
Well, no, I just meant a heavier squat.
Yeah, exactly. You know, shit, even just doing a walking lunge every day instead of loading it. It's like, I think lunges are great. We can save another topic just on lunges and tell you why they're awesome, and a lot of people why they hate them. And it's just because they do it wrong, but
or they just suck.
They do. Well, you know when lunges have really fucked you up, when your ass cheeks start spasming the middle of the workout, not afterwards. You take a step and you just feel it seize already.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I've probably done one too many of these. Probably shouldn't have loaded up the kettlebells. There's nothing quite like a Charlie horse in the middle of your butt cheek after a heavy set of lunges.
I know one of my favorite, whenever we do like rear foot elevated split squats, specifically rear foot elevated split squats in, you know, in class or whatever, I'll always have my new, I just straight up, I hate these are terrible. Like, you want to know a secret? I like leaning. I hate them too. They're terrible. I was like, I've never met anybody in the coaching field that actually likes Bulgarian split squats, rear foot elevated split squats, whatever you would call them. But they're so good for you, that's why we do them.
Yeah.
Like, nobody likes those.
It's,
at least not anyone that I've met.
Everyone, if someone said to me, you can do a rear foot elevated split squat, or you can take a weight and you can lunge the length of a football field and back, I'll gladly take the walking lunges.
Oh, absolutely. I will go the football field and back.
Without even... I'll even do a second lap.
I was waiting to see what your comparison was to see if it was enough to force me back to the rear foot elevated split squats, and it is not.
Yeah. It's like if they said, do 3 sets of 10 split squats, moderately heavy weight, or take the same weight, do walking lunges to the other goal line and back.
Yeah.
Easy.
Right.
You know what? I'll just jump on the track and I'll walk the track afterwards too with walking lunges.
Right?
I mean, split squats are just their own animal.
Now, if you had to fight a bear... I'm sorry.
See, it all comes back to
the bear. It all comes back to the bear. Okay, sorry.
That was a good show because a lot of people commented on that.
Yes.
We'll have to do another one.
I got so many texts after that. or not so many, but I got a few from random people I didn't even know listened to the show. Like, I choose bear. I'm like, hey, that's what I said.
Yeah, I have plenty of people coming in, like, listening as they're walking in, getting ready for treatments. Did you really pick this one? I'm like, oh, you listen? That's great. Yeah. Adam's got a potty mouth. Oh, I'm like, oh, you listened to the other one too, didn't you? Like, you haven't heard this one yet.
Yeah. I completely lost track of where we were.
Yeah.
So, talking about... you were talking about that you should be able to do... That you personally, like, I should be able to do 10 chins at any one time,
that's right.
30 push-ups.
Yep.
And, yeah, sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
No, that's all right. I mean, and for me, that's just my own fitness level. But I know for a lot of people, just doing one pull-up, you know, is a big feat. So... You know, the fact that you're able to run through that progression and kind of let people know how they can go about doing it. You know, and the reality of it is, unless you use that vertical pull position, you're never going to become good at it. So, you know, if someone's only doing a horizontal press will not make you, I mean, a pull will not make you better at a vertical pull.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you increase your grip strength, but the act of a vertical pull, it's a different part of the muscle fiber, you know, at least when we're talking about the lats. You have your vertical fiber orientation versus your more horizontal fiber orientation. So it's one of those things you have to practice. You know, just like bench press doesn't make push-ups any better. You know, one's a weight-bearing exercise, one's a non-weight-bearing exercise. One you're using potentially your body weight, the other one you're using 70% of your body weight. So it's just one of those things that if you want to be good at push-ups, keep doing push-ups. But I guess we can say that about every single exercise.
I will say, and I don't know if it's just I don't know why. I don't know if this makes sense or if there's a physiological reason to it. I will say that, and I tell this to clients too, if you want to be good at chins, it's something you have to consistently do, and you have to consistently overload to get stronger. I know that sounds obvious, but to me, it is the...
one of the patterns you have to do it more for.
Yes, exactly. And I never knew if that was a physiological thing or if it was just more of a like something I've seen through experience and personally felt, but I know personally that as soon as I stop doing chins consistently, I'll go from being able to do 5 in a row without stopping, which is I think that's the most I've ever gotten, 5 or 6 full chins in a row. I mean, that was at 255 pounds or whatever. That's the most, and if I don't do them for 2 weeks, I come back and I can maybe get 2 in a row. You know, and I just, and other people too, you know, like, oh, I haven't been up on the, we haven't done chin-ups in training for a couple weeks, and people come back and like, oh, why are these so difficult?
Yep.
There's no other exercise that I've seen to be that big of a... You know, I'll have somebody work up to doing 315 on a deadlift, and we won't do, you know, heavy deadlifts for a couple weeks, and we come back, and that person can still knock out 315 for just as many reps. It's not quite the same animal. So, I don't know if...
I don't know. Maybe due to the motor pattern itself, just because it's not something that we do now that our hands are fixed to something overhead...
Maybe.
I also think a lot of our pulling variations, it's usually back as the primary puller with the bicep pulling second, whereas chin-ups, a lot of people just really use their bicep to do it. So unless you practice that pattern over and over again, I could see that being a problem. Just from a motor control standpoint, I wouldn't expect any real true physiologic changes to occur.
Right.
Just in that short period of time. Now, for like 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say, sure, you know, you probably lost sarcomere length and size. And,
right.
You know, there's been some atrophy of the muscle just from not using it. But 2 weeks, there's...
Oh, yeah, no. I was thinking more from it just from like a... Something about that pattern is harder to maintain. Not necessarily a, you know... You're atrophying after 2 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would just say it's because the hands are fixed and we're moving our body on our hands, where everything else, it's the lower body that's fixed to the ground and everything else is moving around that. At least that makes sense to me. So whether it's right or not, who knows?
Yeah, whatever.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Anything else you want to go through?
No, I mean, we got deeper into this than I anticipated. But
actually, I do have one question. And sure. I've seen this... I don't see this often, so like, and I don't necessarily believe it. there are a lot of people out there that believe that once you get past a certain age, and I've seen some like higher profile coaches talk about that once you get past a certain age, or specifically with overhead pressing, more so. But I have seen very scarcely some people talk about that, like, once you get over a certain age and your shoulders get to a certain, that even if you can complete a chin, you're running the risk of running into shoulder issues further down the road if you keep doing that pattern. Is that something that you see?
I mean,
as a potential,
potentially, but you know, you are potentially giving up a strength gain by not doing it.
Yeah.
So, am I really worried? No. I mean, does it put the bicep into a position of compromise? Maybe. But is it enough to make me worry? No.
Okay.
And I if I'm old enough to continue doing pull-ups and do them well, then absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too.
Someone's in their 70s and this is the first time they're ever doing it and they have a hard time reaching up to grab the bar, then I probably won't force it, but then that's when you have other variations that you can do. But I you know my philosophy, let's keep pushing until we can't push anymore.
Yep. So this is your first, these last couple weeks I am all over the map. Is this your first Ask Ross Anything back?
Yes.
Over that? Okay.
Well, tomorrow,
right. So, yep, so guys, we are all finished for today. Just a reminder, in the description for this episode will be the link to Ross's first Ask Ross Anything in a few weeks. He was away traveling, so this will be the first one, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday. So we're recording this on Wednesday, so it'll be tomorrow, but depending on when you're listening, Thursday night. Any questions that you have, whether it be health and fitness related, nutrition related, you know, ouch, this hurts, what's wrong with me related, which is what it tends to be a little bit more so, which, well, makes sense. I mean, you are a physical therapist after all.
I mean, it's good. It's nice that everyone can come in and feel comfortable enough to just say, hey, this hurts, what can I do about it?
Yep.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun. I appreciate it.
And it's nice for anybody out there who's listening to this that's maybe a coach too. It's good to get in there because I'll learn stuff too, and I can ask questions that, you know, may pop up that based on something that you say to someone else, or just like expanding on something, or just really corny, crappy joke or whatever. So
it's never a dull moment there.
No.
That's for sure.
All right, guys. Well, until next week, we will catch you later.
Take care.